start this schmooze off with a story. It's a story that I've told people before, and it's one of my favorite stories about the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, Moshe Schreiber, had a son, Rav Avram Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer was just, his son, Rav Avram Sofer, was just as brilliant as his father was, the Chassam Sofer. There was a time where the Chassam Sofer had a shiloh that had to do with Emunah Bitachon. Now, my assumption is that it was regarding the Sefer Chofetz HaLevavos. That was the Sefer that the Chassam Sofer seems to have loved the most. So I would assume it was regarding that Sefer that his son had asked him about. But I'm not positive what the Sefer was, nor do I know what the question was. Unfortunately, the story which is brought by Rav Moshe Wolfson in a certain parsha does not mention this. Does not mention what the question was. So Chassam Sofer heard the question of his son, this question that was all-encompassing and dealing with Emunah Bitachon, and answered him by saying, I don't know. I don't think there's an answer to that question. That's what he answered him with. So 3 days later, he calls in his son, calls in the Chassam Sofer, and he tells him, I want to give you the answer to the question. So he answered the question brilliantly, as the Chassam Sofer normally did, and he told him exactly what he was, what the Chassam Sofer wanted to hear. So the Chassam Sofer understood this was not something that his father had just made up at that moment. This is something that his father already had known and was thinking about beforehand. So he said to his father, why didn't you tell me this 3 days ago? What happened 3 days ago that you weren't able to tell me this, that you were only able to tell me now? And the Chassam Sofer said that there are going to be times in the future when you're a big rav where people are going to ask you questions and you're not going to have an answer. And it could cause you to have a moment of lapse of faith, a lapse of emunah, and possibly even a lapse of judgment because you weren't able to answer the question properly. I want to make sure that you understand, and I wanted to see from you, that even when you ask a question, even if you don't get the proper answer immediately, you're still going to be okay. Because the answer is out there. You may not get it, you may not hear it for the rest of your life, but you have to be okay with asking questions and not always getting the answers. That's what the Chassam Sofer said to the Chassam Sofer. It's a hard thing to say to somebody who's not already initiated, who's not already into it. If you try to tell that to somebody who has questions, legitimate questions, and you don't know what to tell them, and you tell them it's okay to have a question and not have an answer, not always does that person take it well. I know as a kid, I didn't like that. I know I really didn't like somebody telling me that it's a good question, I don't have an answer for you. I didn't understand. If it's a question, then it should have an answer. If it doesn't have an answer, something's wrong. But I sort of realized the chokmah behind it as I grew a little bit older. I have a good friend in Eretz Yisrael who asks me questions all the time. When the Kedoshim died in that terrorist attack in the Har Nof Shul, he was broken. Really, broken. So broken, as they say. He could not deal with it. Could not deal. How is it possible that Talmidei Chachamim, that were in the midst of davening, in the middle of Shemona Esrei with their tefillin on, how is it possible that such people could die? It's a solid question. It's a great question. And recently he said the same thing. How is it shayach that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't stop the terrorists before they do anything? How is it possible that these terrorists are successful in stabbing or running over or doing whatever it is they're doing? A Kadosh Baruch Hu should stop it before it happens. Again, you have to understand, number one, where the questions are coming from. You have to understand what the person is really asking, not what's on the outside, but what he's really sincerely asking, and what he's using as a front as to what he really thinks. But it is, it's an emotional and a powerful question. So I'm going to try to use it within a different perspective, try to show you how to answer such a question. Not the answer, but how to answer such a question. Avraham Avinu, in this week's parsha, moves to Eretz Yisrael at the behest of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lech Lecha, Me'aretz Chol Me'ladzachom Me'beitz Avicha, El Ha'aretz Asher Arek, the land that I show you. He went to Eretz Yisrael, and there's a massive rov, a huge hunger. There's nothing he can do. There's nowhere for him to go except to go to Eretz Mitzrayim. There's no other place. He realizes, on the way to Mitzrayim, there's a problem. His wife. These were terrible times, and the people had very, very strange ways of doing what they wanted to do. And they were more willing to kill a husband and grab that Ish Ish that they were to take advantage of a single girl. Strange in some ways, not so strange in others. But they had more of that taiva for a married woman already than they did for somebody who was just single, who they figured was easy to get by just paying the right amount of money. So Avraham, as we all know, made up a plan. Came up with a huge elaborate plan. But the plan seems to have only been for the Amiraksim, for the Mitzriim themselves. It did not encompass what to do if the king gets involved. And when the king, when Paro got involved, Paro immediately had her taken into the palace itself. As she's sitting in the palace, awaiting some type of punishment, whatever it's going to be from Paro, the marriage from Paro to Sarai, a malach comes and starts smacking Paro, giving him the goyim, makos, which is clearly ma'aseh avos simin labanim, of what's going to be in the future for Klal Yisrael, that when the Jews are captured and put into slavery, makos will be occurring to Paro. That's clearly ma'aseh avos simin labanim. But nonetheless, the question begs to be asked. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do such miracles and save Sarai at the last second by giving Paro crazy negayim, why didn't he make a miracle for Sarai not to be seen at all by the guards that saw her at the gate? Would have been so much easier. I mean, now you have to go through the Yisurin of Avram not knowing where his wife was, of Sarai having to be in the Paro and Paro's palace, of dealing with all the issues that go with that, and then, only then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the miracle. Why couldn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu have circumvented the problem in the first place by just making sure it never happened? Nobody saw Sarai. According to Rashi, she was in a box. Nobody opened up that box. There would be an easy miracle, not a crazy open miracle of Negayim Gedolim being given to Paro. It would be an easy miracle. They just skipped over a box. They missed it. They didn't open it up. They opened up every single one of Avram's belongings except for that one box. That's not a crazy miracle. That happens all the time. They decided not to check Avram Avinu. TSA put him through pre-checks and it was fine. There were no issues. Why is it that this is the way that it had to happen? Why this? Why here? Listen, answers? I guess in theory you could come up with answers. They didn't daven enough until that point. There needed to be more tefillos for them to be saved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show Avraham Avinu that he's with them at all times. There are answers. You can answer it. In theory, there are answers to be able to go. But the real answer starts with a larger idea. Our world is called a world of Hester Panim, an Alma Diskatsia, where things are hidden from us and we are not given any hints as to what a Kadosh Baruch Hu's das is and what he wants. The closest we can get is by learning the Torah and listening to Talmidei Chachamim who have spent their entire lives hovering inside the Gemara and trying to figure out what a Kadosh Baruch Hu's das is. That's the closest we get. But it's a world filled with Hester Panim. It's been thousands of years since we've had a real Navi. A Navi who's come along and said, here is the Word of God. Not someone with Ruach HaKodesh, which we've had even now. We have people with Ruach HaKodesh who have the ability to tell us what a Kadosh Baruch Hu may be saying. We have Nevi'im. Nevi'im that are telling us this is what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to say. It's been years since we've had people that were able to accomplish things that we can only imagine. Now granted, it was only 1984-85 when the Baba Sali passed away. And the Baba Sali was probably one of the last of those real Mikubalim that were outright Mikubalim that were able to do everything. I'm not, obviously, Mordechai Eliyahu, Ravad Yosef, I'm not here to judge. That's not what I'm here to do. But a person like the Baba Sali, that we've never heard of the things that he did publicly for years and years and years and years. Well, we don't have people like that. We don't have people, and even those, they come once in a generation, maybe once every 100 years, once every 200 years. We don't hear about that type of stuff. We're living in a world where there are more atheists alive today than possibly there have been since the beginning of time until 100 years ago. It's possible. Everybody believed in God back in the day. It was just a question of manifestations. How did it work? There were sophists, granted, by the times of the Greeks, there were sophists, but those were theologians who were tremendously, the brilliant people who couldn't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they had a system in order to get in. To be in their system, you have to do something. But everybody believed in God. Maybe a lowercase g in our case, but everybody believed in some type of God or gods or something that was in charge of them. Atheism, it's blown up. Blown up in our world today. Blown up. It's a line that somebody told me. I don't know if it's true. I have absolutely no idea. I think it was Isaac Berno who told me that the number of atheists that have been mentioned that are on college campuses today, people that claim that they're atheists. I know you're all in college, but anybody who's in college, in secular college, is an idiot. There's no question about that. So I know that we should understand that to begin with. But the number of atheists on campus today, okay, is over 65%. That's what they claim to be in two separate studies. Over 65% of young men and women between the ages of 19 and maybe 23 who are on college campuses today call themselves atheists. Call themselves as somebody who doesn't believe in God. I don't know if those numbers are real. Again, I have absolutely no idea. But the fact that such a study can come out, nobody says that's not true. The fact that such a thing can happen, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. This is the definition of Hester Punnett. We just don't understand it. We don't see it. We can't see anything. And if somebody tries to tell you, prove to me that there's a God, it's difficult. It's difficult to point to God through the haziness of the world that we're in today. But that's the way our Mishnah Mishnah is. It's more shy for us to ask questions than it is for us to get those answers. Rav Dessler has a piece in Chelek Aleph that deals with this entire idea. And he says in Mikdam Leo that don't worry about the questions. It's great to ask questions. And it's great to have answers. But the point behind our life is to realize that the questions that throw us off track of where we need to go are all stemming from our Yetzer Hara. It's a crazy line from a Dessler, but I think in my opinion, in my little amount of experience, I think it's true. A person who has a question, who wants it answered, you can see it in his face. The person who has a question, who goes off from it, already had a taiva that led him to that question. Understand it like this. A question that's for the sake of understanding. I want to go further. I want to bring myself to the next level. Let's try to understand what this means, why this is happening, what can I do to make it different. A question that changes your essence into a person who is ready to do something more, to become a different person. That's a real question. A question which is saying to you, so why bother in the first place? Why bother? Why in the world should you do this? It's a question. That's a question that you have to look at and say, that's coming straight from my Yetzer Hara. Says Rav Dessler, many questions stem from the Yetzer Hara. And your job is to define, is this a legitimate question where it's going to help me improve my life, improve the world around me, improve the people that are around me? Or is this a question that's just leading me down the same dark path that it was never on beforehand? That's the question. My kids asked me a solid question the other day. Solid question. They said, Daddy. I said, yes, children. And they said, why did Mommy serve mashed potatoes tonight for dinner if we had mashed potatoes last night for dinner? Solid question, right? So you know what I said to them? I said, are you going to eat the mashed potatoes anyway? They said, yes. I said, then I'll answer. It's because Mommy forgot. You hear the way that I did it for them? If they're going to say, well, I'm not going to eat the mashed potatoes because it's 2 days in a row. Unless you give me a good answer. I'm not going to give them a good answer. And I know I'm not going to give them a good answer. So I wanted to define, why are you asking the question? Okay, maybe that was a little deep. For a dinner with mashed potatoes. Maybe it was just a little bit too much, right? But there are questions that your kids are going to ask you where you're next. You're going to have absolutely no idea. Daddy, how do batteries work? Magic. That's all it is. Daddy, why do you, when you come home, sometimes you put your shoes over there and sometimes you put shoes over there? Oh, Kabbalah. There's no reason. There's no answer that you're going to be able to give me these questions. See, there are questions that are just for the sake of asking. And that's what kids are all about. The kids are not going off the derech at the age of 6 because of mashed potatoes. If they do, that's crazy. That's really not what's happening. So you have to get involved. What does it mean to ask that question? What kind of a question is it? Is it a mashed potatoes question? That doesn't matter. The point is that it's good to ask questions. It's good to have a bad answer. It's good to be able to say to yourself, you know what, I want to work this out. I want to figure this out. I want to go further. That's the idea behind it. So when you're looking at the Torah and you're saying to yourself, why in the world did HaKadosh Baruch Hu not save Sarai beforehand? Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu wait until finally, at the very, very end, he gave him the guy? Here's the shot. If this is going to send you off the derech, if you don't get an answer to that question, you've got some issues. I'm not going to give you an answer that's going to be good enough to answer, because the fact is there are so many shilas in the Torah that we cannot understand. Why are there 10 maisim brought about Avram Avinu? And they seem to be the most contradictory things in the world. The most contradictory statements. He takes money from Paro, the king of Mitzrayim, so that his wife should be engaged to him, but he doesn't take money from the king of Sodom. That makes no sense. Are there answers? Yes, there are 16 answers. But there are, nonetheless, that's a good question. Why is it that Avraham Avinu is known as the man of chesed? A person who invites people over to his house and does anything for them, sacrifices 3 cows for them. And when his brother-in-law, Lot, is taken at war, he's immediately, there are no overtures of peace. There is, I'm going out, I'm going to kill every single one of these people. 4 kings, all dead. That's not a man of chesed. That is a warmonger. By normal people, that would be a warmonger. That's a great question. He's a man of chesed who immediately goes to war. No overs, nothing. Doesn't ask them any questions. It's not Nimrod, you want to give back load? It's just you're going to die clown. That's all it is. Nothing else but that. Sarai. You look at the Torah and you understand, what was she doing with Hagar? What was going on there? There are questions. You want answers? There are answers. But yet, there are certain times where we have to look at the Torah, we have to say to ourselves, we're not always going to get the best answer. That's the way the Torah is. That's the way our world is. It's a world of Hester Punim. And you work, and you work. And you will probably, if you work really hard, find awesome answers to every single one of the questions. You'll find awesome answers. Are they the ultimate answer? The answer that answers everything? And now you have the answer. Maybe. It's possible. Likely that it won't be. Likely you'll still have more questions from the answers that you got. And that's the point of learning Torah. That is it. To expand. To get more shilas. To ask more. To bring yourself more into the sugya. To figure out, this is not just the pshat and Rashi and Tosfos. There's a problem. There's a problem here. What is the pshat behind Rashi and Tosfos? What leads Rashi to make this pshat over any other pshat that he could have given? That's the point of learning anything. You have to strengthen your emunah from within by asking the questions and asking more and going further and being okay with not always having the answers. It could be that that's part of the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically wants to get involved. Maybe the answer is, by Avraham Avinu and Sarai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show Avraham Avinu that he's willing to save him at the last second, even at the last second. David HaMelech had a line that was brought down even to his children, his grandchildren, that even if a sharp sword is on the shoulder of a person, you're ready to be killed, right? You can't stop davening. Because Gio understood it that way. David HaMelech never said it, from what we see in the Torah. We don't see a Gemara that deals with that. The Achronim deal with the issue of where David HaMelech could have said this. But I think it could be learned straight out from the Torah, from this Parsha. And that's a lesson that could be learned forever. You ask the question, you can come up with answers to other things that have no shaykhus to this whatsoever. Everything is connected to one another in one way. I can't begin to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu was allowing certain losers to get away with what they're doing in Eretz Yisrael. I have no idea. I can't understand. I can't understand why certain people are successful and certain people aren't. Obviously, there are so many situations where the plans were thwarted, where Tzahal was able to figure it out, or the person just, it didn't work. Whatever he tried to do or she tried to do didn't work. Obviously, this happens all the time. All I know is, I'm not worried. I know there is a tremendous mind out there, and mind I'm using in the euphemistic sense, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu has every single thing into account, taking it all there and allowing things to happen the way it needs to happen. Does that help me in the heat of the moment when something bad happens to me? Not always. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it takes a second or two for me to sit there and say to myself, this is also part of God's plan. For me to say the line of Rabbi Akiva, Gam Kol Mada Ovid Rachman Latav Ovid, or the line of Nachum Ish Gamzu of Gamzu Latova, it takes a little bit to say that when something happens to you. It's easier to say when it happens to somebody else. Not to somebody else, you never say that to somebody else. But to say it to yourself about something else. But I do know that if Rabbi Akiva Eger can come out with a sefer called Kushios Atzumos. Anybody ever seen this sefer? I knew I should have brought it. Kushios Atzumos are around about 1,000 kashas throughout all of Shas and Midrashim that he could not answer. That's the sefer. It's called Kushios Atzumos. Strong questions. Did Rabbi Akiva Eger go off the derech? I hope you said no. The answer is no. Questions are questions. The answer is yeah, it takes a long time. To understand that you might not get an answer is so important. To go through life and to say to yourself, I'm going to work harder to make sure I get something that's going to work for me. I'm going to find something. And to have a munan bitachon, that there is a plan behind the scenes that we're not privy to. And that's our world. That's Hester plan. That's the world that we live in. You want it to change? Be better. Bring Mashiach. Be Mashiach. It's not bad, right? Might not be Menachem or Yinon or any of the other names of Mashiach. Change it. It'll be fine. Bring it about. Make everything different. Until that point, test your fun. It's okay to have a question. It's okay for us to look at Eretz Yisrael and say, I don't understand, and that's okay. I'm going to daven. What else am I going to do? Get yourself used to that outlook, and things you'll see, your emunah, your bitachon will grow by leaps and bounds. You'll be able to realize things that you didn't do before, and you might be privy to a little part of that plan. A little part of the plan might be revealed to you. Have a good week, everybody.